Back to My Garden, episode 67.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Attention, garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most incredible garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow an amazing garden powered by fish? Find out the secrets and discover how to build fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another episode of Back to My Garden. Awesome guest today here. We're going to go all the way across the continent to the West Coast, up to the Pacific Northwest. Karen is an awesome garden blogger from Seattle, Washington. She's a garden designer for more than a decade. She's an avid at-home gardener for nearly 20 years. She has a passion for helping people transform their spaces. We have a ton to talk about today, so please welcome to the show from Seattle, Washington, Karen Hug. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Dave.
I'm glad you're here bright and early this morning with us.
Sure.
I've given you a brief introduction, and I want to get to know you a little bit more, and our listeners definitely want to hear your stories. So Karen, take a minute or two and share with us a little bit about your background and how did you get into gardening?
Well, boy, that was a long time ago. That was probably in the 1990s that I got into gardening. I grew up in Chicago, and I hadn't really had a lot of experience with gardening in the Midwest, but I moved out to Seattle shortly after college, and not too long after that, ended up buying a little house. And you know, when you get a house, you have a yard, and sometimes you get very excited, and I did. And so I started buying annuals from the, you know, local hardware store and whatnot, and then that just sort of grew as I learned more about gardening. And I remember buying a Better Homes and Garden, just sort of like all-around gardening manual book, and that was very inspiring to me. I remember just poring over the pictures and reading about these shrubs and plants that would bloom all summer long. And I remember seeing this picture of a buddleia, you know, a butterfly bush, and the idea that I could grow a shrub that bloomed until frost and attracted butterflies was just amazing to me. It was just, I was so excited. I just thought, wow, this is cool. Plants are cool, you know. And so I just gardened at home. I was in a different career at the time. And then eventually I went to horticulture school and, you know, kind of eventually sort of figured out I had a knack for designing. And I started designing people's yards. And at the same time, I started writing about gardening for, like, local gardening newspapers and things like that. And so that's kind of brought me up to today, where I have a small business. And I blog online about gardening in the Northwest.
Fantastic. You've given us a lot to work with there, Karen. The time is going to be jam-packed. We got a lot to talk about. Now, Karen and I are going to talk about gardening and sit back and relax. But if you're driving your car listening to us today, please keep both hands on the wheels. I'll be taking notes throughout the show, and I'll have all the notes, links, and resources up on the blog at Back to My Garden. Karen.
Yes.
You have an awesome blog. I'm going to share it with the listeners at www.gardeningseattlestyle.com. That's an awesome blog. And then you've modified your Twitter handle. Make sure, for listeners, you follow Karen on social media at Twitter, at GardenCStyle, and that's GardenSeaStyle. I think Twitter needs to get longer handles, don't they?
Yeah.
No. Garden designing, let's start there, because
sure.
I'm sure you have a ton of stories. I want to hear about your early days of designing. Like, computers weren't that powerful back in the 90s. Now everything's on computers, but, you know, throughout your career, what's it been like from the early days to now? You've seen a lot and done a lot.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, I started designing for just sort of friends and family, and I started on smaller jobs and just kind of, you know, eventually kind of got bigger and bigger, jobs. And I don't know if there's that much of a progression. It was weird because when I was in horticulture school, I started designing when I was in school and just sort of barely finished school because I got so busy. And just found that I just loved transforming spaces for people. I mean, here I would come in, their yards would be weedy, they would be completely overwhelmed, they wouldn't know where to start, and my job, and it still is in breaking it down and helping them figure out, you know, okay, what space bothers you the most? Let's tackle that space, and let's put out of our minds the other spaces. And just to make one border beautiful, I think it really helps anyone psychologically if you have one space that's completed. But the idea that I could come in and transform space for people and they would literally jump up and down and clap their hands after we were finished, just it just made my passion grow, you know. So over the years, I think that I'm a little bit more confident in my choices, but the experience is, you know, very similar as it was when I first started out. You bring joy to people's lives, and that's why I love doing garden design.
Wow. You really paint a word picture because I can see people being stressed out with drama and then being, it's almost like tranquility or harmony.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of studies show that just looking at greenery lowers the heart rate, lowers your blood pressure, and makes you a less stressed out person. And so to be able to assist in doing that for people, I think it's a really special job.
Do you ever get it dumped on you? Like they basically come in, you come in and they're at their last wit's end and just say, rescue me?
And that's kind of where, you know, that's where I really have to kind of talk them off the ledge, I guess. But what really helps too is when people trust me as a designer to do what I need to do to transform the space. It's harder when people question every tiny little move I make. If they can just, and thank God I'm at this point now where people will say, I don't even need a design. Just come in and make it happen. Just kind of work your magic. And that is just so great because then I can envision something. I can kind of space it out on a sketch and I can just make it happen.
Being up in the Pacific Northwest, you know, when somebody comes to you and says, help me, and they hand you their yard and there's that trust there, you have a unique climate. Are there challenges in designing gardens because of where you live?
Definitely. Absolutely. First of all, there are very few flat backyards in Seattle. Seattle is a very, people, I think, you know, you think of San Francisco and San Francisco being very hilly. Seattle is just as hilly or maybe even hillier than San Francisco. So a lot of times you're working on slopes. And because we, you know, have the mountains and the glaciers, a lot of times you're working with clay soil. Sometimes you're working with very rocky soil. And, you know, as you probably know, clay soil is very difficult to work with, and you really have to amend that soil with compost to get it fluffier and aerate it some, you know. But the joy of gardening in the Northwest is that we can grow 90% of the world's plants in the Northwest area.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's an amazing thing. I mean, we can grow everything from bananas. We can't really get banana fruit, but you can grow a banana tree to, you know, conifers, and really hardy, like, you know, zone 5, zone 4 plants. So the choices are vast here. You can do, I did a garden a long time ago for a couple where we did sort of a faux tropical garden, and we grew a lot of big broadleafed plants and had a ton of fun with that, where we did big, bold colors, bold pots, and kind of created a Northwest sort of tropical look.
I dropped my pen. I'm already on the second paragraph of note-taking. I spelled faux wrong, so... and then I crossed it out. My only experience with Seattle was through an old TV show called Frasier.
Oh, yeah.
And it rained every day on that show.
Oh, that's true.
But I understand it doesn't rain every day in Seattle. You have a little dry spot in the summer, don't you?
We do. And, you know, that's something I should have mentioned when you said the challenges. I mean, the rain is definitely a challenge, but what a lot of people don't know is it's kind of a Mediterranean climate. It rains, geez, you know, maybe 8 months out of the year, but then those 4 months are pretty dry and they're pretty hot. So we get a lot of sun and a lot of dry weather during, you know, May, June, July, August, and September. And it doesn't quite rain every day, but it rains a lot. And really all that does is create big, beautiful foliage. I mean, it's so lush here. Everything grows. And if you are in winter months, you have to watch out for weeds because the temperatures are pretty mild, and weeds grow. They grow in December and January. And so we're kind of weeding all year round, and with the rain, the challenge mainly is putting plants in, kind of keeping in mind the issue of rot. If you have clay soil and you have a lot of rain, and you put in plants that like good drainage, then you will have a problem. And more than the cold, some things like phormiums and like a banana or a canna can rot because the soil is too heavy for it. Whereas if you planted your canna in a very light, sandy, kind of loamy soil in Seattle, it'll be just fine. It's mostly the rot. It's not really the cold.
Mm. You know, Karen, a lot of our listeners, they listen to the podcast for ideas. And sometimes it's ideas of what to do. Sometimes it's ideas of what not to do. What are some common mistakes or errors you see when you go into somebody's backyard?
Oh, well, I have to say that to me, the first rule of gardening is right plant, right place. So, you know, and nursery tags aren't always very specific. Sometimes they're very general. Like if you go into a nursery in the Northwest and you want to buy a dogwood tree, that tag will say plant in full sun. Well, a dogwood tree is actually an understory tree in the Northwest. It's happiest in light shade. So a lot of people don't realize that, and they put their dogwood in the front yard where it bakes, and then it dies.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, or people plant their rose in a very shady area, and it gets black spot and doesn't produce very many blooms. So I would say putting the right plant in the right place is most important, and that's something I run into with clients a lot, is they just don't know. And, of course, it's not their job to know. It's my job to know. So I would say if you can do anything to improve your home gardening skills, just read up on plants and get good recommendations from websites or books that are about the gardening in your area.
Can you share that rose tip again, if it has black spots?
Well, if it gets black spot, you know, the disease black spot, I'm not a huge rose expert, but it will get black spot when it doesn't have good aeration, the conditions are very moist and maybe shady. The leaves will get black spots on them, and that rose isn't very happy. A lot of people, you know, in the Northwest, because we do have such great rain, we have very tall trees. Well, a lot of those tall trees shade out our yards, and so people are desperate to grow sunny, you know, plants like roses in their backyards that may only have half-day sun or something, or less than half-day sun. So if you live in the Northwest and you have a shady garden, you got to go with it. You just have to plant all the beautiful plants that we can grow in the shade.
So listeners, if you want even more tips and connect with Karen on social media, follow her on Twitter at GardenCStyle. And make sure you check out her awesome blog at www.gardeningseattlestyle.com. Remember, there's two T's in Seattle. I'll put the link in the show notes. Karen, you're blogging, you're writing, you're designing other people's dream spaces and bringing tranquility to their lives. Do you have time in your life to garden yourself?
I do. It's my passion.
Nice. What was your garden like this year?
Well, it was it was great this year. It was kind of strange though, because I was invited to be on our local garden tour in, I think it was last January, and I was so excited, but I had just taken out a huge laurel hedge in our backyard. I actually have a very long, narrow lot, and this laurel hedge was approximately 100 feet long. And so I had just put in a fence, and I had gained about 8 feet of space, which was very exciting. But then I was invited to be on the garden tour, and I had 100 by 8 feet of space to fill before the garden tour happened. So luckily, I have a wonderful friend who's also a garden designer who helped me transplant shrubs, buy some shrubs, and fill in that blank space. And it ended up being great. But the garden tour was kind of looming as the months went on, and one problem I ran into was I had to battle moles, because what I had done was I wanted my lawn to look good, and so I had fertilized it with a natural fertilizer, and I was fertilizing all of my perennials and shrubs with fish fertilizer. And fish fertilizer and just natural organic fertilizer for lawns will produce worms. And, of course, you want worms because you want good soil. But the more worms I produced, the more it attracted moles. And I had just, oh, my gosh, I had a ton of moles in my yard. And we were putting in the mole bait and trying to get those little guys to go away. And as the gardening tour loomed closer every morning, I would come out on my patio, and the patio is something I inherited with the house. It's made of concrete squares with soil and lava rock in between, and I would find these mole humps every morning, and I would just, oh my God, I would just, I would stomp the mole holes down, and I'd try to sweep up and make it all nice again, and then I do all of the work I had to do for the day, and I go back in at night, and the next morning the humps would be there again, the little mole piles of dirt all over my patio.
Oh,
and
no.
Then I'm, you know, stomping them down again, and I'm going in again, and the next day they're there again, all the way up until the day of the garden tour. And whereas the morning of the gardening tour, they were setting up the canopy for the musician, and I was stomping down mole hills frantically and sweeping up my patio.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
All these official guests and dignitaries, what are they going to think?
Exactly, right. So it ended up being fine because the moles took a break for the day and they weren't around. But sure enough, the next day or 2 days afterward, I had humps again on my patio.
But wherever they didn't dig, I'm sure it looked amazing because of all the worms.
It did. I mean, everything, all of my perennials, all the shrubs were happy, happy. And one thing that did do for me was it gave me a deadline to finish all of the areas of my yard that hadn't been cultivated. And so parts of it were new and parts of it were very established, and I was just going with it. And that's what you have to do sometimes with gardening. You just have to go with what you got and, you know, make just know that, well, maybe I'll change it later, but this is what I'm doing right now at this time. So
the moles frustrated you. Did you have any surprises, or did anything really bring you joy that you didn't anticipate?
In preparing for the show?
Well, in your garden overall. Like, I know it was a strange weather year for a lot of climates. Did anything do rather well, or did anything struggle?
Well, yeah, we sure had a hot late summer. And I'm not sure that I mean, I definitely was watering like crazy, and we had a very dry spring that year, this last year, too, and so I was watering even in April, which we never, we really usually never have to water in April because it's so rainy here. But I remember watering, and I remember, well, my my Phormians did really well. They love the heat. My Cannas did well. I have a Chilean fire tree, which did very well. It loves the heat. And a Nicotiana, let's see, it's Nicotiana sylvestris, I think, just sort of sprouted all of a sudden during summer and grew the biggest leaves I have ever seen it grow. It just got happy, happy in the full sun. So I think that's about, that's kind of, I can't really think of anything else. I mean, the hot weather, you know, you just have to get out there and water more than you expected to keep things from crisping up and expiring. Otherwise, they will, you know, die. And one thing people don't realize is plants can die over the course of like 2 days. You know, if they're dry, and you see those leaves sagging and then they get beyond, you know, the point of no return, I mean, they're goners. So you really have to get out there as soon as you see plants wilt and water right away.
I'm just looking at my notes, and you had asked me to remind you to talk about invasive plants that you have that's pretty unique to your climate.
Oh, yes. So, you know, I actually live in a very forested area just outside of Seattle, and one thing that we have out here is a lot of English ivy on our trees. And I have a whole ravine and at the very back of my yard that's full of ivy that I'm sort of always battling and trying to get one step ahead of. But before we bought our house, there were maybe three trees that had gigantic ivy climbing up them. Those trees in windstorms now will drop a lot of extra branches, much more so than the other trees in my yard. And I think that one thing that's important, especially now in winter when we're not really out there actively gardening with pretty flowers, is to just get out there and get a pruning saw and just cut the ivy off at the base from your fir tree, your cedar tree, whatever tree is growing up. Because what happens is ivy grows up the tree, it goes out into the branches, it will strangle the branches and defoliate the branches. Well, if when they're defoliated, they get weak. And that leads to a lot of breakage during a windstorm. And so not only is it bad for the tree, but when the branches break, they can hit your car or they can hit your house or, you know, your garage or other things. And so I think that even though people kind of think, oh, well, it's no big deal, it's just another plant growing up, you know, a big sturdy fir tree, that ivy is actually really invasive and really a threat to our fir trees and our cedar trees, our hemlocks and all of those trees.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. You know, Karen, I just looked at the clock and our time's flying by. Now's the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
Okay.
This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with novice gardeners. Are you ready to play?
I guess so.
All right. I'm sure in your circle of friends, you're the expert gardener, and you've heard lots of people say, oh, I kill plants. I have brown thumbs. What do you think stops most brand new people from even trying gardening?
I would say the physical labor of it. It's definitely backbreaking work, although it's a great way to stay in shape. And not knowing what plant to plant where. And just sort of being kind of spooked by the knowledge that they know that they don't have. But if you start out simple and you start out with the workhorses of the gardens, like, you know, very hardy shrubs like abelias, weigelias, buddleias, spireas, you know, all those plants are very tough. And if you plant them in the right place, they will give you a lot of joy for many years.
Nice. Good, good, good. You've had some interesting teachers throughout your career. What's the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
You know, I was thinking about that, and I kind of wanted to say, like, something very, you know, something very, you know, intelligent and wise about gardening itself. But you know what? The thing I remember most from horticulture school is that my tools teacher had said, let the tools work for you. Don't think, oh, I'm going to pull this dandelion and, oh, it's hard to pull, but I'm just going to yank on it harder with my hands until I pull it out. Get your trowel, get your hori-hori, and stick it in the ground and really use that tool to pry the thing out so you're not straining your hands. Also, sharp pruners are really your best friend, and it really matters that you have sharp tools and quality tools. Because if you put a cheap pair of pruners on a big branch and you're trying to cut it, you'll just snap the branch off in some weird place, and then disease can get into that branch, and you'll hurt your tendons in the process. So I would say let the tools do for you, work for you, and don't cut corners and use your body instead.
Mm, that's awesome. Good, good. Number three is a fun one because the internet's such a great resource. I mean, 20 years ago, we had to go to a library and check a book out to find answers. Now it's just Google it.
Yes.
Can you recommend one or two websites that you use as a gardening resource or maybe some blogs you read?
Well, I would say the one of the resources I use the most, and it is specific to the Pacific Northwest, is the Oregon State University Plant Database. And if you search, you know, gosh, I don't know the URL, but if you search on Oregon State University Plant Database or OSU Plant Database, you'll find that website. And that website is a great website for Northwest gardeners from everyone from, like, Victoria, B.C., all the way down to Southern Oregon, because that website has botanical information about plants. So if you have a tree in your backyard and you have a leaf, and you, or a little branch, and that's all you have, you can actually go to the OSU database and look at pictures of branches and leaves and match it and find out, identify what you have. And also, the OSU database has pictures of the plants in different forms. A lot of websites have pictures of plants close up, and they have these sexy blooms, and it's very beautiful. But you don't know how big that plant's going to get, and you don't know if that tree grows in a vase shape, or an oval shape, or how that, you know, how that tree will look in 10, 15 years. The OSU database has that. They have pictures of the plant in a mature state. They often have it in sort of what it looks, may look like in fall, what it looks like in bloom, the branches, a leaf comparison to another tree or plant that is very similar in appearance. And then they'll have, again, botanical info about exactly where you can grow it, what kind of soil you can grow it in, et cetera.
Nice. And I always remember MoBot. That one sticks with me.
Which one?
MoBot. That's the Missouri State.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I use that website as well. And the OSU website is a little bit similar to that. I tend to like a lot of botanical garden websites and nonprofit websites because they have very... they have the most information and the fewest ads.
That's right.
You know,
I'll put the link up for OSU in the blog as well, so you can go right to their plant database.
And you know, Dave, the other website that I would recommend for novice gardeners in the Northwest is a website called GreatPlantPicks.org. That is, it's a nonprofit organization that brings together the best experts in our area, and these people, bless them, they get together and they argue about what are the best plants to grow in the Northwest, and they have created a huge database of them. And so if you're just a beginner, you can go there and get information about, again, what the shrub, where the shrub likes to go, what kind of soil it likes, what you can pair it with, you know, how, you know, they have a little bit of design advice here and there. And they only put up the plants that they recommend. So you're pretty, you're insured success by picking those plants because they're not going to tell you that they're not going to put up plants that they think aren't hardy enough or have problems or are susceptible to diseases, etc.
Nice. Question number four, we love to share good book recommendations with the listeners. Do you have a favorite gardening book?
I do. And I guess the one that I used to turn to the most when I was first learning about gardening is the American Horticulture Society A to Z Gardening Book. And again, that's a great book for similar reasons to the OSU database. It has botanical information, and it will tell you this is the leaf shape, this is the pattern that's alternate or opposite, the plant grows this tall, it's native to this area. And looking at where a plant is native to is often very helpful, because if you think, well, this plant grows in Japan, and Japan is kind of rainy and mild, like Seattle is, then it will probably grow in Seattle. So you can tell a lot by just figuring out if the plant is native to the kind of climate that you live in.
Nice.
And I guess I would say the other book that I have to give a shout out to that I love for Northwest design inspiration is a book called Garden Retreats by Barbara Blossom Ashman. And that book is so wonderful because it's very simple. A lot of books, I noticed, overwhelm you with choices and what to do, and I could have a pond, but then I could have an arbor, and, you know, you're just sort of like, your head is dizzy after reading all the possibilities. Garden Retreats just kind of showcases the coolest plants of the Northwest in some very kind of different settings. And that's all it is. And she writes very poetically about it. And it's an old book. It's probably published around the year 2000, but I still go back to it just for inspiration and to kind of reconnect with the sort of the spiritual side of gardening and why I garden.
Nice. Question number five, I'm going to throw you a curveball. There's no right or wrong answer, okay?
All right.
Next year. What's one thing that you've just been itching to try in your garden? Can be anything. Or what's the hottest thing that nobody knows about, nobody's talking about, but they will be in a year or two?
Well, then you're talking rare plants. And then you're talking a little bit more money. But I would say one of the recent discoveries for me that I love, and it's surprisingly hardy, is a small tree called Drymes winteri pewter's pillar. And it is it's a very unique tree because it, I think it was found by Dan Hinckley, who's a teacher and explorer out here in the Northwest. And he brought them back from probably, I don't know where, he goes all over the place, China, Nepal, someplace like that. And he started reproducing them, and I think they're becoming more and more available now. But I've grown several in my backyard for probably the last handful of years, and that tree is so beautiful. It's got big, broad leaves that are kind of, it looks almost like a succulent. The leaves are bluish and kind of almost rubbery. And the branches, the new growth is very rubbery, too. It reminds one of a madrona tree or an evergreen magnolia a little bit. And the form is very small, and it kind of grows in an oval sort of shape. But that plant is so cool because you can pair it with dark foliage plants. So you can pair it with, like, with a black sambucus, and then it just pops. Or you can pair it with something that blooms a magenta, like salvias that bloom in these hot magenta colors, and that makes the blue just sort of, you know, shimmer. So there's a wide variety of things. You can pair it with small-leaved plants, like a yellow spirea or something, and then that will contrast really beautifully with the big, bold, blue, broad leaves of the pewter's pillar. So I guess I would say that is the tree I'm most excited about and I'm looking most forward to for it to be more available to people. Oh, and one other thing I would mention about it, we have had some really hard frost the last couple years during our winters, and that thing has sailed through with flying colors. Like I said, it looks like a succulent that would be very tender and just kind of shrivel up and go to mush in the frost. But it doesn't. It's definitely burnt. It's got some brown marks now on the leaves for me, but The winters, the really harsh winters we've had, it has just sailed through with flying colors. That thing is so tough and so beautiful that I'm really excited about that plant.
Fantastic, Karen. That's gold. Nicely done.
Well, you get me talking about plants and gardening, and I'll never stop, Dave.
Dear listener, I told you this was going to be an awesome episode. Make sure you connect with Karen. Visit her on social media on Twitter at GardenCStyle. And please bookmark and share her posts from her awesome blog at GardeningSeattleStyle.com. Karen, you've been an amazing guest. The time has flown by.
Well, thanks, Dave.
I want to give you the last word today to the listeners around the world. Can you leave them and us with either a pearl of wisdom or maybe a note of encouragement on our gardening adventures?
Sure. I guess I would just say, as I said before, when you garden, try not to sweat it. Try not to worry too much about all that there is to do and whether you're making the right choices. Because, you know, in the end, plants are incredibly tough. They're incredibly delicate, and yet they're incredibly tough. And so if you need to transplant something later, you can always do it. You can always change your mind. And if something dies, well, that gives you an excuse to go out and buy something newer and cooler. So I guess I would just say don't sweat it. Just have fun with it, and don't put a lot of pressure on yourself. Just enjoy the process.
Fantastic. Karen, you've been tremendous. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks a lot, Dave. I enjoyed it.